Good morning. We have got the agenda before us. The first item is opening, welcome, and purpose of the meeting. You are all warmly welcome.
Recording in progress.
Into this meeting. The purpose for the meeting is outlined in our agenda, where we're going to receive briefing by Public Service Commissioner. And again, we're going to deliberate on the opportunities and barriers posed by climate change for small enterprises, youth, unemployment, graduates, and women, including access to land, finance, and investment. Then we'll also consider the adoption of the petition report on the issues of Telkom. So I'm declaring this meeting officially opened. We'll now zoom to item two, which is roll call and apologies. Do we have any apology? Brakin, can you take us through, please?
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, honorable members. Good morning, Chairperson of the Public Service Commission and the colleagues. Good morning, colleagues from Parliament, and good morning, stakeholders that are in attendance. Chairperson, in the platform, I've recognized you firstly, and then Honorable Jacobs, Honorable Mathulelwa, Honorable Nkosuthuli, Honorable Dlomelang, Honorable Kruger, Honorable Hendricks, and Honorable De Villiers. So far, those are the members who are serving from the quorum, and I haven't received any apology from other members. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Attendance noted. We'll now zoom to the next item, which is adoption of the agenda. Can I have a mover for the adoption of the agenda, honorable members?
Honorable April here, Chairperson. I move for the adoption of the agenda.
Thank you, honorable April. Any seconder, honorable members?
I will second, Chair.
Thank you, honorable Kruger. The agenda has been duly adopted. We'll now move to the next item. I will invite the leader from Public Service Commissioner to present their presentation before us. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and members of the committee. My name is Dinky Dube. I'm the Director General for the Public Service Commission. The presentation we are providing to you members comes about as a result of the monitoring and evaluating work that our office does on an annual basis in terms of Section 196 of the Constitution. We're going to be able to share to the members what the findings of the commissions were in respect of the payment of invoices by department within the prescribed timeline of 30 days. We're also going to be able to give you comparative analysis over the years so that you would have a view in terms of how the national and provincial departments are faring in terms of complying with this legislative prescript. I am joined by my colleagues who will provide the presentation. With your permission, Chair, I'd like to then ask my colleague, Mr. Cameron Jacobs, who is the chief director that is responsible for the function, to give the presentation. Thank you very much, members.
Thank you. Over to you, Mr. Jacobs.
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, honorable members. Chairperson, I just want to alert you that I'm unable to share the screen because it's disabled, I think, from your side. Please assist in terms of that. I don't know if it's going to be shared from your side.
Yes,
he will give you the sharing powers.
It has been done.
Okay, thank you.
If, sorry, sir, if you can show your face so that members can first see you and then in the, as you continue, you can switch it off. For, thank you very much.
Good morning, everybody. As the my DG said, I'm Cameron Jacobs. I'm the Chief Director for Executive Support and Stakeholder Relations. As the DG indicated, the purpose of our presentation this morning is just to provide you with an analysis of the compliance or non-compliance of the invoices paid within 30 days. Just excuse me for a moment. I'm trying to... there we go. I want to provide you with the statistics and as well as a comparative analysis. But in that as well, you will immediately see that the non-compliance with Section 38(1)(f) is endemic across national departments and provincial departments, and this is despite the work of the Public Service Commission over the past decade or so to try and ensure compliance with Section 38(1)(f). Our mandate as the Public Service Commission is to ensure an effective and efficient public administration and a high standard of ethics within the public service. And the constitutional values or the compliance to the constitutional values, which for all intents and purposes, colleagues, is a value system, a constitutional value system within the public administration and public service, is to try and ensure accountability, transparency, a high standard professional ethics, amongst others. I also just want to alert colleagues that Section 31F is a peremptory requirement. In other words, accounting officers must settle all contractual obligations. It's not a discretionary to comply within the prescribed period. It is a peremptory requirement. There's also an instruction note that I just want to alert you of 2011 that requires departments to submit monthly information on the payment of invoices. For national departments, it's the 7th of the month. For provincial departments, it is the 15th of the month. I did indicate earlier on that the Public Service Commission over the past decade has tried to ensure the compliance with the payment of 30-day invoices. And to that extent, we have partnered with the Portfolio Committee on public service and administration. We constantly monitor quarterly reports coming from national and provincial treasuries. We engage with the executive authorities and accounting officers to see if we can identify repeat defaulters to try and resolve and mitigate the non-payment. And again, like I said, this is in terms of the constitutional principle of accountability and sharing of the information in terms of transparency. We've also gone to the extent, a chairperson, of trying to name and shame, if you will, defaulting departments and to advocate for the inclusion of the peremptory payment into the performance agreements of Director Generals and HODs. This is a trend analysis that you will see here, firstly, of national departments since 2018-19 financial year. And what you would see here is the endemic nature of the non-compliance. If you see 2018-19, it is 138,557 invoices were not paid or were paid with after the 30 days. But you look at 2021-22, it's the same figure of 138,000. Currently, for the 22-23 financial year, you're looking already at 29,322 invoices that have been paid after the 30 days. The rand value is astronomical, and you will see later on when we look at provinces just how bad it is. And you're looking at into the billions. So 18-19, I think it was 7 billion. 2021, it was 4.4 billion.
The same applies in respect of invoices older than 30 days has not been paid. This again shows that that despite the efforts, again, invoices older than 30 days are not being paid. If you look at 22-23, currently in terms of quarter one, it is 959 invoices compared to the sort of annual figure of 131 for 2021-22. 959 invoices for one quarter is on the ridiculous side. At a provincial level, you will see the figures here as well. Again, astronomical when you look at the rand value, but if you're looking at the total number of invoices across the financial years, 280,000 in 2018-19, 263,000 in 2021-22, and quarter one is currently looking at 75,000. So it looks like just for one quarter, if you look at what the annual data is of 200 and odd thousand, we're pretty much going to get there or breach the 200,000 mark by the end of the 22-23 financial year. When you look at the figures on the right-hand side, Chair, you will see again the astronomical figures into the billions, 24 billion in 18-19, 25 billion in 21-22 at 28 billion. Once again, invoices older than 30 days are not being paid. They're in the thousands. 22-23 quarter one already is sitting at 42. And again, on your right-hand side, the rand value, again, huge astronomical figures. I spoke earlier on about the instruction note, Chair, of 34, which is a requirement for departments to provide monthly reports in terms of the payment of invoices. And you, if you look at that table there, you will see that majority of the departments provided their submissions late. So even in respect of a simple requirement, just to issue monthly reports around the payment, at a national level, the majority of departments are late, with the Department of Agriculture and Land Reform actually not submitting for a particular period. This, I want to emphasize, again, speaks to the non-compliance, speaks to the lack of transparency in the provision of information. And we obviously know in terms of Section 32 of our Constitution about the importance of access to information. This is just another way of putting that the figure. You remember I spoke earlier on about the 959 invoices older than 30 days were not paid. This is quarter one in 22-23, comparatively speaking to quarter four of 21-22, where it was 134 invoices not paid. So it seems to suggest that it's not getting better, and in fact, in certain instances, it's getting worse. Again, quarter four, 21-22 of 36,365 invoices versus 29,000 invoices paid after 30 days in quarter one of 21-23. This is just a figure in terms of the rand value in terms of the previous slide, Chair, of 4.7 million of invoices paid after 30 days. Of invoices older than 30 days not been paid versus compared to 4.1 million. This table just shows you where it actually resides within particular departments. Of the 959 invoices that I indicated are that have not been paid after 30 days, and your departments there that are particularly guilty is the Department of Water and Sanitation and the Department of Tourism. I think the Department of Water and Sanitation was 2.5 million. Of the 4.1 million and the Department of Tourism at 750,000. This slide speaks to the instruction note of 34 in respect of provinces. This is an interesting slide for me in that you would see all the green, which means that they all submitted on time. with only a few departments being slightly late in terms of the adherence to the instruction note 34. However, as I indicated when we looked at the slides of the non-payment, as well as payments after 30 days by all provincial departments or provinces, it is exceedingly high. So notwithstanding that they have committed to instruction note 34, it does not translate into the payment of invoices on time. So this again, just a comparative study between quarter one and quarter two in terms of provinces. And you can look at that particular quarter four, 21, 22, just how high those bars are. Invoices older than 30 days not paid, exceeding the invoices paid after 30 days at 67,000 versus 62,000. Quarter one, you're looking at 75,000 versus 24,000. Again, this is really into the hundreds, the tens of thousands. Again, the figure here, astronomical, in the billions, chairperson, 7.4 billion of invoice worth, the rand value of invoices paid after 30 days, and 8 billion in quarter one of 22-23. 6.1 billion compared to 4.8 billion. So again, there's no shift in respect of complying with section 38(1)(f) of the PFMA. This shows now a table of all the provinces, and you would see that every province in particular is falling foul of the requirement to pay within the 30-day period, the prescribed period of time, with Northern Cape in particular guilty of not paying invoices that are older than 30 days, 233 million. So that shows you it's endemic across provinces, Chair. Now, I think that, you know, we have established through the work of the Public Service Commission and its trend analysis that this is an endemic problem. It seems to indicate to us that there is dereliction of duty on the part of accounting officers and departments, and in fact, an abdication of responsibility. I've indicated at the introduction that Section 38(1)(f) is a peremptory requirement, so we must do it. We do not have a choice. There is no discretion in that regard. So what are the reasons, Chair? I think that there are a number of different reasons. One can put it down with a lack of appropriate capacity and capability within particular departments in terms of supply chain management systems, in terms of the financial management systems, which are often poor. Planning and reporting is a problem, so there is a lack of alignment between budget and procurement. But there are also systematic challenges in terms of administrative systems and IT systems, where there is an inadequate IT system to properly track invoices. Also a lack of financial disallegations, all of which, and poor administrative systems, all of which results in either documents being misplaced or misfiled, unrecorded invoices, and a complete lack of tracking of invoices. But there's also capacity and capability problems just in respect of interpretation of contracts or the drafting of contracts and the interpretation of them, which then has creates problems down the value chain when one needs to interpret particular contractual clauses or particular provisions. If it's not drafted sound enough, there's always going to be problems down the line. As I indicated, in terms of administrative systems, if there aren't proper standing operating procedures, you're not going to be able to properly document your processes, which in turn results in delays and errors. But I think that we also need to be honest, Chair, around the particular culture within the public sector as a whole, where the particular culture where it is self-serving as opposed to servant leadership does contribute to a large extent to the non-compliance And then that is reflected, as we know, on an annual basis in the AG's audited reports across the board in terms of the public sector. The lack of capacity, Chairperson, I have indicated before, but I also just want to emphasize that when the ministerial task team did the document on the professionalization of the public service and the public sector, it was identified that supply chain management is not professional enough. There's a lack of expertise as well and capability also in respect of finance management. And these are particular areas that requires professionalization within the public service and the public sector. So you can see that the sort of the reasons are a broad ranging. There could be other nefarious reasons around sort of delayed payment of invoices in order to solicit bribes, but fundamentally it's just about the lack of capacity, capability, a culture that is more self-serving as opposed to serving service delivery beneficiaries. The impact, Chair. The small businesses in particular, they do not have sufficient capital and they cannot compete with large companies because they just do not have those credit reserves in place. So the payment of the invoices are exceptionally vital for the growth of their business, for the expansion of their business, for the payment of salaries and paying their own creditors. If that is not done timelessly, small businesses tend to fail, small businesses tend to struggle. But it's also acts as a deterrent for if our country is really aspiring an entrepreneurial economy, it does act as a deterrent for would-be or wannabe entrepreneurs because they understand and they can see in the media and with their colleagues the challenges faced by small businesses. So it closes the system as well. More importantly, I think because of the nature of SMEs that they're still growing, they're still expanding, you're dealing with a David and Goliath situation where they do not have the financial muscle. They do not have the legal expertise to go against and go up against the government. And so they often at the mercy and are held ransom to the whims of government departments that are not honoring their particular constitutional and legislative obligations. But there's also in fact, I must say, Chair, in respect of government, where the trust deficit, when we have a situation like this, which is endemic over the past decades, it does widen the trust deficit between government and the citizenry. And it does create over time a legitimacy crisis for the government. So I think that this is quite a serious matter that requires the attention of the Portfolio Committee and Parliament. And we have to ask the question then, if we are trying to build as government an entrepreneurial economy, trying to grow our SMME sector, the extent to which government is either contributing or killing SMEs is something that we need to apply our minds to. We also need to apply our minds of being a capable, professional, and ethical public service, as is in terms of priority one. And so we do need to pay attention to this and how we actually resolve the particular issue. So in conclusion, Chairperson, I do think that it's important for Parliament to assist in holding government departments accountable. I think that we need to be rather innovative in terms of ensuring that accounting officers meet their statutory obligation in terms of Section 31F. And we perhaps need to consider reviewing the PFMA as an example to ensure the peremptory obligation of Section 31F. What does come to mind perhaps is a consideration of of reviewing Section 83 of the PFMA, for example, which speaks to financial misconduct. And Section 83 provides for particular conditions for financial or requirements for financial misconduct. And there could be a view to actually including Section 38(1)(f) under Section 38, Section 83, to ensure compliance. Because I think it's critically important that if there is perhaps, and we seem to suggest that in terms of the trend analysis, a dereliction of duty and abdication of responsibility by accounting officers. So we need to find innovative ways in which we hold accounting officers and departments properly to account. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. King, can you go back to our agenda? Thanks for the presentation. It was powerful. It is assisting us as an organ who is doing oversight. We'll make sure that we do our job. Accountability and transparency prevails in this world, because failing to do so, we are crippling our small businesses. I will now invite hands so that we deliberate on this matter so that we can be able to release them. You will assist me, Braking, to identify hands from honorable members. Honorable members, can we deliberate on the presentation so that we'll come up with some recommendations? It's our responsibility to do that so that at the end of the day, those small businesses must not die, they must grow. So we can't give the department budget and embark on those programs which we are busy doing, but only to find out that the very same people who should assist our people are failing us. Over to you, honorable members.
Chairperson, there's a hand of honorable Kruger. And honorable De Villiers. Honorable Mchenjane. Those are the hands so far, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Kruger. The stage is yours.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the presentation, Mr. Jacobs. Madam Chair, you know, I sit with a cup of coffee in my hands, and the taste it left, this presentation left in my mouth, it's utter bitterness. I actually throw the coffee away because I can't believe we actually suspect the problems of the 30-day payment, but we never thought, I never thought, because, you know, I did a lot of petitions around the same matter, and I never thought it's of this huge... it's a huge problem, and if you look at the rand value, it's enormous. Madam Chair, and we only talked here about national government, provincial government. We didn't even touch municipalities. And I would like to see a presentation of this nature on how much money municipalities owe small business. And then also the private sector is as guilty as government, because, and you know, I'm talking many times about this, big business is just bullying small business. And if you as a small business start complaining to big business about your invoice, they just cut you out of their system, and then they left you out of the dark. And that's pure bullying. So we need to look at a solution on municipalities as well, and of course private companies. Madam Chair, and also what is very, 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 very concerning is there's no consequences. There's billions and billions around outstanding. There's thousands of small business dying out there. There's no consequences whatsoever. Then I'm also wondering about the transversal agreements that we talked so much about in this committee, and especially in the fifth parliament as well, because there's supposed to be transversal or MOUs agreements between departments and small business development. And if this agreement was managed by the Department of Small Business, we would have saw this what happened here. So what I say is our transversal agreements is not in place, and if it's in place, it's not managed by the Department of Small Business. Then the last point I want to make, it's a comment. Our small businesses are dying. Tomorrow, the same public servants that we are talking here not doing the job are going to strike because they want a 10% increase. On the one hand, they want a 10% increase, and according to this presentation, they don't do their job. So maybe it's time for us, or for government, or for politicians, to also start paying public servants 30 days late, or even 60 days late. Let's hurt them on the pocket. Let's they feel how it felt to run out of cash, to have a cash flow problem and die as a small business and lose all your savings, because a lot of small businesses, Madam Chair, startup capital comes from life savings. Most and many of them is their pension money, and they lose it because public servants don't do their job. So let's start paying them 30 days late, or even 60 days late, or even 120 days late. So I think it is ridiculous, Madam Chair, to think that there's a strike tomorrow because public servants want 10% increase, but our small businesses, the flagship of government, every politician, when they stood on the podium, they say small businesses will save South Africa, but our public servants of failing South Africa. There's no consequences, Madam Chair, and I think it's disgusting. And I think some of those public servants need to wear orange overalls. And that's how far I want to push this. I thank you, Madam Chair.
Next speaker is Honorable De Villiers. Over to you, sir.
Good morning, Chairperson, and good morning, colleagues and presenters. Thank you for that very honest presentation which we received today. I think every single committee member would probably have experienced it the same as the Honourable Kruger, as shocking and just absolute injustice. We all understand how hard it is out there at the moment. The double-edged sword, the rising cost of living, inflation, post-COVID recovery. It is not an easy country to live in. Unemployment is really, really high. And to then hear that those champions, those small business owners, when they contract with government, that they don't even get paid, it's unforgivable. But Chair, there's something here which I think all of us are missing, and that really is the root cause of what's happening here. It is right that there should be better accountability. And I must say, I've never heard a suggestion like Honorable Kruger's one that, you know, if maybe if the officials don't pay suppliers, then they should also not get paid their salaries. That would probably make some of the officials actually sit up and pay the suppliers. But nonetheless, I think that if we think that we are going to create more accountability inside the public service, and if we are going to create a culture of professionalism, because that's what it comes down to, you know, having a culture inside the government where officials are proud of what they do and they are professional and they are effective at what they do. And if we want to create that, and we sit with the current government policy of cadre deployment, it will never happen, because it every single time, everyone from the director general all the way down to whatever level of government you go, if people are employed not on their skills, not on their ability to do the job, then how on earth are you going to hold them accountable in the first place? If you received your job because you are carrying an ANC card, not because of your experience or your skill set, and if you have been told, listen, you are a loyal ANC cadre, and therefore you will get this job, how can you hold someone like that accountable? How can you expect that person to be professional? They don't have to be. They can just do whatever they want, because they're not there based upon their skills. So the root problem with all of this is ANC cadre deployment. If we persist to staff our government with people who are not employed because of their skills, because of their knowledge, because of how professional they are, then we will never be able to have a professional service. It really is as simple as that. So I hear all of the other things. You can make laws, you can try and create better culture, you can, if you don't stop cadre deployment, none of this will ever be fixed. We need to create a professional government service. Not people who serve the DA, not people who serve the ANC, not people who serve the EFF. Professional, non-politicized government officials who are appointed because they are experts in finance or experts in engineers or experts in whatever field they are employed to be in. But we can all talk and talk and talk and talk, but no suggestion is going to fix the current problem while we sit with a state public service system that doesn't reward people for their skills, but rewards them for being members of the ANC. Thank you, Jefferson.
Thank you. The next speaker is Honorable Kenjana. Honorable Ntenjana, can you hear me?
Chairperson, I think we have lost him, maybe because of
okay,
a network.
Okay, we still have any other hands?
Yes, we've got Honorable Matulela and then Honorable Jacobs.
Honorable Matulela.
Can you try again? Testing 1, 2, can you hear me?
Recording in progress.
Honorable Matulela.
Yes, because I've just spoken to Minister Kupel and say, please, don't jam my budget.
Honorable Matulela.
Kuteta mna noba kuteta bani ngoku.
Kuthetha wena, ngiyakumemeza ngoba ngifuna iplatform yakho.
To all honorable members, ngibulisa ngibese ngibonga i-presentation. Esivezela kahle, this reveals that really as the country or as government, we need to capacitate the state to have to be able to do some of the minor things itself than to give it to the service providers, because some of the things they are done deliberately, so to just hold those to hold the people or the service providers to a cage where they will depend on some individuals there are some individuals that do not care about how the small businesses must be developed. They only have their own interest, of which we don't know as this committee. There is no accountability really by the public servants at all. I also feel the same with Honorable Kruger, that he's serious. There must be consequences if people they do as they wish and they just undermine small businesses like that. Some other time there must be a lesson to be learned. There must be also, it must be, you know, why we usually take our frustrations to the ones who are producing and the owning big businesses, having their own profits. For instance, when we go to streets and do close some of the shops, that's where you find an answer, seriously. That's why Honorable Kruger is saying if you take their salary as well, they will change the way of doing things. Because if the big businesses, if you hit them in their profit, really they change their bad attitude of thinking that they've arrived. I will just conclude on saying that we must consider also to capacitate our small businesses and the state must be capacitated and have enough way of dealing with issues directly than giving it to people who do not care. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thanks, Honorable Mathulelwa. You came up with some resolution. Indeed, you are legislators who are making laws. We must come up with some recommendations here. I'm happy about the issue of capacity as well as consequences and accountability. And also the issue of also focusing by Honorable Kruger to those other sectors, private sector and municipalities. Can we hear now Honorable Mpejana if he's back?
Well, thank you very much, Chairperson. Although I'm encountering a problem of a network, which is another pandemic here in our country. Now, Chairperson, it's disgusting. I think we all agree with our colleagues. We all agree here, and with the whole committee, I think we agree that indeed, what we thought we knew, we did not know. This presentation because what we were thinking about was just little. Because we could hear complaints every day from our small businesses, but we couldn't really take it like that. This thing is real serious and it's disgusting. But a serious network problem here where I am, Chairperson. Am I audible now?
Yeah, I can hear you now. I can hear
you
now.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Yeah, it's another pandemic, Chairperson. No, thank you very much, Chairperson. This thing of load shedding is another pandemic. It is my point. The point I was making, Chair, is that
I can't hear you.
Agree, yeah, in this committee that it's really killing our small businesses. No wonder we're thinking that maybe it's these entities or this person. Can you hear me now, Chairperson?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Yeah, I'm really sorry for that, Chairperson. Now let me cut the matter short here, Chairperson. There need to be an accountability, really. The government must do something about this issue. Now, we have institutions like SARS here, Chairperson. I'll just give an example. At SARS, if you don't pay your return in time at SARS, there is a consequences. And then those consequences are for real. Now, the reason I'm saying this
I'm battling to hear you, my friend. Can you write down?
Can this department, can we maybe speak with the
Honorable Mtenjane, I will suggest that you write down.
So that we empower this department as well. Because remember,
I will suggest that you write down some of your points. You were also not audible. Can you hear me? Honorable Mtenjane? I propose that you write on the chat some of your points. You were cutting.
This is the department that must do the oversight on those.
Are you done? Braking? Yeah, Bengithi mbhalele ku-chat ukuthi abhale phansi some of his points. He was sometimes not audible. Honorable Mtenjane. I was saying write down to the chat group some of your points. We could not catch them all.
Okay, it's okay, Chairperson, but I tried to move here where I was. I wonder if I'm audible now.
Now I can hear you myself. I heard you. I heard some of the points, but not all. So I was trying to say to capture your recommendations, if you can drop them down on the chat, it will assist us.
Yeah, no, thank you very much, Chairperson. But also, as I was wrapping up, Chairperson, the point I was making was that we all agree, Chairperson, in this committee. I think we all agree with our colleague that what we thought we know, we didn't know, because this was an eye-opener, this presentation here. It then opened our eyes as a committee that indeed our small business are suffering. No wonder why they can't grow. Some of them are dying, they say. Now, the point I was trying to make here was that we need to have consequences. There must be accountability. Look, we are government. The portfolio committee belongs to a government. maybe there must be a way where we can maybe speak to Parliament or make up a bill that then says that that gives the small business, I mean, that give this department powers. That because those small businesses are we are the one who are looking after them as a department. Now, can we have powers that if member A did not pay member B, we have a right now to impose a sanction to member A, so that this thing can stop? Because now there are no consequences at all, and we all agree about that. That if you just don't pay, and then nothing will happen to you, you move on as usual. But the other one that you have affected is having a problem. Look, these small businesses are hiring people here. They give a service to wherever they are working with, and then they also have people who are working under them. People who must get salaries at the end of the day, just like everyone else. Like us parliamentarians, every month we get our salaries. Now, those people are the same, just like us. They need to get paid. But now, how do you pay people if you are not paid yourself as a company? It's a problem. It's a pandemic. It's another pandemic. Yeah. So this committee must have, this department must have, but this committee must have a power to can summon those people and bring them into books. And consequences must follow as such. Now, I made an example with SARS here, Chairperson, that we have institutions like SARS. If you don't pay your returns at SARS, SARS will come to you and you will pay by force. And also, you will pay by interest. Maybe we must start to create something like that, that companies which did not pay, which were not paid in time, they must expect interest on their payments, even from government. Imagine even the same government, that is the government of the people, is doing the very same thing to the very same small businesses. So this thing, it's our government also, private sector, government, everyone, they must pay the consequences. If they fail to pay the people in time, they must pay the consequences. They must pay interest, even in the banks. If you don't pay your account in a bank, the next time you are paying, you must include the interest. So that is what must happen, I think, Chairperson. So shortly, Chairperson, because of the network, that is the contribution I'm trying to make today. Thanks a lot, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Mtenjana. You were audible. We captured everything. Thank you so much. Bra King, do you still have any other Honorable member who wants to input?
Yes, Chair. It's Honorable Jacobs.
Honorable Jacobs, the stage is yours.
Thank you, Chair, and greetings, Molweni Lonke. Goeiedag, Amo. Now, I want to share the sentiments of my colleagues across the different political parties. We condemn this non-compliance of all the departments. Chair, I'm asking that this portfolio committee issue a statement saying that we are not happy, we are disgusted by non-compliance. We want to name and shame the top 10 national, provincial, districts, metros in all the areas. So, Chair, I'm basically saying that there's a portfolio called the Chief Procurement Officer in the National Treasury. This person is or office is responsible for procurement in government. We need to summon all of them. So we need to summon the political principal of the guilty party. We need to summon the Director General, the Accounting Officer, and we need to summon the CFO of all these departments. So we need, our department must be able to say, who is the big culprit? So if water and sanitation is the big culprit in national forestry and fisheries, we list them down. And we go through also the provinces. We call on the premier of the Northern Cape. We call on all the premiers to come and account. So all the guilty parties must come in and account. So I think we as members across the parties are tired of no consequences. So if it means I get the sentiment that people are saying that those individuals, those three accounting officers, the finance officers, and the executive officers, they must explain to us why are they not paying and what are they going to do. So I think for me, it's clear that we are unanimous around this. Okay. I think I also don't want us to play part of political, and I want to address Honorable De Villiers here. You know, cater deployment, especially when it's happening, especially here in the Western Cape. I know of the DA, they want black people, colored people to vote for them. But black and colored people are not competent to hold positions here in the Western Cape. Many of their HODs or just pale males here in municipalities. It's the colored woman that must train the white man to take their positions. We've got numerous examples of many people that don't even have matric that is assuming position here. So the DA mustn't throw glass stones because they also have a strong candidate policy. And I agree, let's professionalize the public sector. We as the ANC are moving towards that. We've supported the professionalization framework. I also want to make the point that there's many hardworking people in the public sector. And I think their fight for a just and living wage should be respected and supported. But I think what we need to do is to hold management accountable. So if you are paid as a CFO, you paid a lot of money, whether you're in the municipalities or in provincial government or in national government, you need to come and explain, why are you not spending billions on our small business? And there need to be consequences. You need to be either charged or you need to be dereliction of duty. Okay, the days of saying there's no capacity is over. If you assume you're getting a high salary, we assume you have the level of competence and capacity. So, okay, I'm making concrete suggestions. I'm sharing the sentiments of many of the fellow members across. I'm also asking that this portfolio committee empowers UK to make a strong worded statement as Parliament that we are not happy with this result. We're not happy with what is happening. We want change. We want intervention. Even if it means that we must ask the minister in the presidency to come and explain and say to us, Honorable Minister Gungubele, why is this? There's a MNE, there's the monitoring people, there's all of these departments. We don't want a committee. We want to summon all of them and we want change. So every quarter we want to see that these numbers are going to change. It's like we're asking the Auditor General to show progress. We also want progress on this. And we need to start getting consequences there. So I'm sharing this thing. Let's not make it political. Cadre deployment is wrong. I think what we need to do is ensure, let me rephrase that. Many parties deploy people, but they must ensure that they have the requisite skills and requisite competence. And I agree with the presenter that we need to ensure that our public servants put our people first. So I think those are some of the comments I want to make. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Jacobs. Do you still have any other hand, Braki?
No, Chair, those are the hands that you have.
Those were the hands. Just to allow the presenters just to respond, but it's not their responsibility because they are the commission. They are giving us what they have observed. Is up to us as members of the portfolio committee to take charge. And I agree with all the members who are going to issue a statement. We are condemning all this behavior of non-compliance. The PFMA is clear on how are we supposed to conduct ourselves. And I agree that we need to involve also the municipalities as well as the private sector in this regard, because if we fail to do that, really we are killing our small businesses. So the leader who was leading the presentation, just to respond on the remarks by the honorable members, but it's our responsibility to take what you have presented to us and move forward. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and members. Perhaps as concluding remarks from the PSC, it's important to note some of the key reforms and interventions that are taking place in the public service. Honorable Jacobs has already noted the professionalization framework that has been approved. It is going to be implemented. We expect that it will go a long way in ensuring that appointments are done on merit, as members have indicated. The PSC is going to be playing a central role in ensuring that an implementation plan is drawn up on the professionalization framework and really monitor the implementation thereof. There's also an important intervention that is taking place to really strengthen the oversight role of the PSC. That is review and amendment of our current Public Service Commission Act. Because as members would know, the extent of the mandate of the commission currently only can go as far as the national and provincial departments. And so it is envisaged that with this review of our current law, then our mandate can extend towards the municipalities as well as the state-owned entities, as members have really alluded to the magnitude of the problem. However, what we do as a constitutional entity is that we are part of the Forum of Institutions Supporting Democracy. So we do leverage the powers and functions of other constitutional entities, for example, the Public Protector. And in the last meeting we've had on the Forum of Institutions Supporting Democracy, the Public Protector is also looking at this matter of the non-payment of invoices within 30 days. We also want to now start utilizing the forum such as the one for Director Generals as accounting officers. As a PSC, we plan to go and make this presentation to sensitize them and on how their departments are performing and to ensure that they, as accounting officer, really execute their mandate, Chair. I thought it was important to highlight those key reforms as members that deliberate on this matter further. To then conclude from my side, Chairperson, before we then thank the members, let me just check if my colleague, Mr. Jacobs, would want to add anything on the comments and remarks made by the members before we exit. Thank you. Cameron?
Thank you, Dube. This is empowering us since we're going to issue a statement. We appreciate the renewal and the amendment of the Act. It will assist us a great deal. Jacobs? Do we have something, Mr. Jacobs?
No, Chair. Thank you very much. I think my DG covered everything. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Honorable members, let
Chair, there's a hand from Honorable Kruger.
Honorable Kruger.
Yes, thank you, Chair. I just want to add something that I did mention, but maybe I didn't make a formal proposal, is the transversal agreements between Department of Small Business Development and the rest of the departments, government departments. I think as soon as possible, we must get the department, the DG here, and come and explain to us how many of these transversal agreements are signed and how are they managed, because that was exactly why the committee in the fifth parliament gave them it was proposed and it was accepted, and the Department of Small Business had to go and sign transversal agreements with all departments. So I would propose that we get the DG here as soon as possible and tell us what is the how many transversal agreements was signed and how are we managing the 30-day payments via the transversal agreements. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Kruger. You are also empowering us as the only member who was here during the fifth parliament. We appreciate that. But let me take this opportunity and thank the presenters as well as honorable members who are speaking with one voice and who are going to issue the statement. I believe our officials have captured all the recommendations made by you, but we will make some follow-up since they are promising us that they are going to have a session and also to make sure that the executing authorities are accountable and are carrying their mandate properly. Yes, we're not harsh when we say we may immediately propose that the one who is found guilty must not immediately get his or her salary, but we don't have such powers. But we've got powers to can summon them to come and account before us and make sure that consequences are being taken seriously. Thank you so much, let me release them so that we can proceed with our program. Thank you so much, Dube and Mr. Jacobs.
Thank you very much, members. Thank you.
Bra King, take us back to our... Bra King, can you take us back to our program, please? To our agenda?
Yes, I think you can see the problem. It's briefing on opportunities and barriers posed by climate change.
Who is briefing us?
It's Miss Elise.
Miss who?
Miss Elise.
Miss Elise.
Yes.
Ma'am, the stage is yours.
Thank you very much, honorable members. I appreciate the time with you today. I'm just going to share my screen. If you can enable the share screening, please, Chair. Thank you. Let me just see if it's sharing now. Thank you very much. All right. So thank you for the opportunity. My name is Elise Hutton and I'm representing Trade Industrial Policy Strategies, known as TIPS. And we've been doing some work on climate change related to MSMEs, and I'd like just to share some of those findings with you today. So the presentation will be covering, I'm just going to stop my video if that's okay, maybe just to help those with a better line. So the presentation will be covering just briefly, South Africa's commitments to net zero, and especially from a policy perspective, I think it's a good reminder for all of us in the context of COP27 that's happening this week. And then the impact of climate change on small business. We're going to be looking at some climate adaptation and mitigation opportunities. And then we've done a study now to look at the barriers to access to inclusive finance. And we talk about local green entrepreneurs, LGEs, in this study, and particularly today, a very strong focus on female and youth inclusion to participate in the green economy. And we're going to be looking at faces of innovative finance, and then I'm going to conclude with a few policy recommendations and considerations for the committee to take forward. Let me just start. I think the first point is, you know, there's three things in life, unfortunately, that we cannot escape. We all know it is death. We cannot escape death. Secondly, taxes. And then the third one, which is a whole new introduction, which a lot of people need to get their heads around, is the notion of net zero. So our country has very strong commitments to meet net zero targets. And, you know, this is from various policy commitments. So we're looking at the South African National Determined Contribution, the NDC, sets our targets for net zero emissions by 2050 and a low emission development strategy. So I'm not going to go into too much technical details, but I think it's important to also understand that SMEs plays a significant part of meeting net zero commitments. We are agreeing that we are going to commit to peak our emissions in the next 8 years by 2030. And that's the kind of red flag today, I think, that I just want general consensus and awareness for the committee that 8 years is not a long way, and we need to make sure that we can put some actions in the ground so that we don't impact SMEs negatively. I heard one of the members saying earlier on he had a bit of a not a good taste in his mouth from the coffee and the conversation on non-payment. Well, I really hope that we can sweeten your taste a bit today, because there's a lot of opportunities for SMEs, and it's not all negative, but we need to understand where our planetary boundaries are sitting. And in today's day and age, it's not necessarily only around saving the rhinos, you know, it's not about that. It's about building resilience within our communities. We are all aware of our COVID recovery period. We are still very much still in a recovery. And climate change, unfortunately, have devastating effects in the marginalized groups. Often are the ones who is in very, very exposed to climate change. So here we can talk about floods in KZN. We're all very much aware what happened with the floods, destroyed our infrastructure, and people that is left without adequate shelter, access to water, power being destroyed, sanitation infrastructure. It's a huge cost also to the country and to government. If we are not resilient in terms of our infrastructure and how we respond to the impact of climate change. And this is where SMEs can definitely play a role, especially in climate adaptation. And I will elaborate a little bit more on that. Let's just take a moment to look at where South Africa is sitting in terms of our green recovery efforts. So I would like to just pause the presentation here for a minute and take you to the green recovery tracker for South Africa. This is a tool that TIPS has been working on to monitor all the policies. And you can visit this. I'm happy to put it in the chat. But it's very important. We've done this study and we looked at different countries across the world and we evaluated the efforts regarding the responses to a green recovery. And that makes sure that we look at environmental as well as social and economic efforts to recover. And it's very much still in that, even if you're looking at the EU delegation for South Africa, they've got a 5-year recovery plan, and it's very much focused also on supporting SMEs to recover from COVID and the impact. So there you can see South Africa scoring 2 out of 5. You know, we've got quite a far way to go, but at least we're not sitting on the 1. But it's policies. If you want to go to the tracker, and you want to go and have a look, and if you don't agree with some of the policy scores, you are very welcome to also have your say. It's a very collaborative platform, so you can click and have your say and say, I don't agree. And I'll show you also, sorry, let me just get back to that button. I can also show you in terms of the SMME recovery, what is our position in South Africa. Let me just go there, and I'm happy to take questions at any point. Let me just go to South Africa again. Sorry, I'm getting an admission. Yes. Just give me 1 minute. Sorry, I see that my power is running a little low. Let me just plug in. All right, so here we can see the range of policy commitments, and I think this is always very useful if anybody is talking about a green economy and they want to relate policy. We're looking at governance, we're looking at our National Green Economy Plan, inclusive governance, the ECB business strategy, wealth accounting, finance, different aspects in finance, and then sectors, and the small business report here. So I can maybe just pause a little bit here. We scored quite good, 3 out of 5 here. It's because we have a number of policies that's been updated to respond and better support SMEs. So this is a couple of resources as well that you can go and have a look at. But in terms of green economy and SMEs, I just wanted to give you a little flavor today on what we're talking about. So I'll move back to my presentation now. I think for small business, it's important to understand our efforts. And in our research that we've recently done, we found that South Africa is quite advanced in terms of just addressing a number of ecosystem development, green economy, programs, a lot of activity within green industries opening up, also in relation with the European Green Deal. We've looked at a study of the impacts, the positive and negative impacts of the EU Green Deal on trade for SMEs. There's generally quite a huge consensus and a good support to look at green industries. And you might want to go through that in your own time. So now we're going to come to climate investment. I'm jumping quite quickly. So if anybody have questions, please just slow me down. So I think what's really important about climate investment. So, you know, we're not talking today about saving the rhinos. We are really talking about how is our planet and our people, our communities going to survive? How long are we still able to inhabit this planet? And for that to happen, we we do need to start looking more closely at investing at in climate finance, especially to build resilience in terms of infrastructure, more decentralized infrastructure, and SMEs can provide a wide range of services and products to ensure localization, to support township development, smart township development, bring energy, food, water, and a range of adequate housing and transportation solutions to communities in need. And just to make sure that we are conscious about being resilient. So the whole debate around climate change, just to remind everybody, is we are trying to move towards a commitment for net zero by 2050, because we want to make sure that we lower our carbon emissions and we can reach the 1.5 to 2 degrees Celsius target. If our planet heats up more aggressively, the ice is melting quicker, our oceans become very hot, there's also dead spots in the ocean, the currents are changing, so that impacts the entire climate. And we get increasing floods, we get wildfires, droughts in some areas, and this all is really threatening to all of us, and we're sharing finite resources on this planet. So it's very important that SME participation in climate adaptation and mitigation strategies are taking, I think, more of a forefront on the debate these days, and we need to have these conversations. So if we just remind ourselves again with climate change, food security, water security, our ecosystems, health, infrastructure, and the livelihoods of people. And this is becoming more increasingly demands and stresses that's putting it on government structures and institutions, especially in Africa. If any of you are following the COP27 debates, you will just see what is happening. It's quite a valuable Twitter feed if you can follow. But then if we just look more broadly at our climate action tracker, so this is a tracker that's been developed, and this is basically a scenario for looking into the future, looking at what we are doing with different policies. And if we are not going to act by 2030, we have a modeling to say what we need to do to reach the 1.5 domestic pathway for Celsius reduction. So if we are not doing that and we reach the 3 degrees, that is, our planet will be in trouble, and that means our communities will be in trouble. So I think a little bit of maybe what is not good news, this can maybe make your coffee sour again, but unfortunately, if we are looking at trends for multinational corporations and we're looking at what is happening in this whole drive to net zero, we are seeing in this image, it's from the Chartered Accountants study, and I'm happy to also share this. If we're looking at this 30-year timeline and we're indicating the carbon expiry date for suppliers between 2020 and 2025, you can see the removal of non-compliant suppliers has already started happening, and it represents a 15%. This is projected to increase by 62% by 2024. This is only in 2 years' time. And by 2025, 78 of suppliers will have begun removing. So the whole trend is national corporations are removing suppliers. They're shortening their supply chain to meet their net zero obligations. So by the year 2037, it's estimated to reach the average net zero carbon emission target. So this is important. I think it's very important for Parliament members to understand the impacts of these changes and what it will mean for SMEs. SMEs are already burdened. We just heard the conversation of non-payment, which is just a practical application. But if they are participating within big corporate supply chains, what corporates will be doing is putting the pressure of compliance, which is additional cost to report. Small businesses don't have the capacity to report on net zero. They don't have the expertise and the time. But this is going to be a different burden put on them to be able to play within these supply chains. And this is also related much to the European Green Deal, EU Green Deal, and American Green Deal, which is also trade implications that's putting these pressures into place. The CBAM mechanism will target European import of electricity, aluminium, cement, steel, and fertilizers. And this will be already rolled out from next year, January. We're just 2 months away from that. Now I'm going to come to a little bit of barriers. So if we start looking at what is the generic barriers that green enterprises, is local green entrepreneurs is experiencing across many countries. I've just came back from Brussels, where we had a conference discussing these barriers, also with the European delegation and commission and other climate finance investors. We were a couple of countries from Peru, Trinidad, Senegal, Uganda, India, and Mongolia, with more or less the same kind of backgrounds in terms of SMEs and where we are making progress in green economy and where we are still struggling. So this research was really done to provide a landscape of funding available in our ecosystem in South Africa and the challenges experienced by SMEs. What we've done is we had about 1,000 local green entrepreneurs in a survey. We were also very inclusive of women and youth. Many of them are even in the room. They've been invited to report on their recovery challenges and also more generically, what is their internal and external barriers and specifically access to finance barriers. With this sample group, you know, we were able to ask people from different languages to call in and transcribe their interviews. We really made sure that every local green entrepreneur's voice were heard, and we had 10 interviews with key informants within the ecosystem. This included the DFIs and investors and also a couple of other stakeholders in government and also the public sector. Then we had about 4 focus groups in June. And many of the stakeholders today here that's been invited, but also the Department of Small Business Officials who was drafting the SMME and cooperative funding policy were also invited. And we had sectoral groups to discuss what are the challenges on energy, water, waste and agriculture for access to land challenges, what type of finance is a challenge for youth to access. We also broadly looked at the future female initiative. Some of the females are in here today in the meeting, trying to understand what is different cycles of the business, what is the finance challenges for scaling or for patent development, more early stage. We've also spoken to youth from the Presidential Unemployment Stimulus Program. They've involved 300 youth in a program that focused on the water sector. And we also started looking at what are their challenges. This is the report, and I will send you a link to this report, which you can read in your own time, but this is the key findings and barriers. So if we are looking at financial barriers, it's inappropriate collateral requirements and lack of credit guarantees. And what we've seen in South Africa, fantastic, with the innovation fund that the EDSE organization is doing, and with CIFA and CEDA is a total of 333.3 million. That is earmarked for green industries, new green industries, and there they're specifically looking at taking more risk and around 200,000 rand loans, which is kind of the gap, the missing middle that nobody wants to finance, and very much a big focus on youth and women inclusion within green industries. So we're seeing a very positive, innovative finance solution there that will roll out in the next 2 years. But this is only 33.3 million. I don't believe that is enough. We need more finance. Because the nature of collateral is still very much a sensitive issue in South Africa, not a lot of people have access to land or fixed assets to put forward. They have movable assets, but most of the credit still lends itself to collateral that is not available for the SMEs to give and track records of putting down their homes and their valuable assets that puts them also at huge risk. Then prohibitive interest rates. We understand our interest rates is quite high. Given cumbersome application procedures, the eligibility criteria is so much red tape for an entrepreneur to access any form of finance. And there needs to be definitely a reduction on all of those layers. And a lot of entrepreneurs also repeat that they're not getting any feedback when they do apply. So there's no transparency in terms of what funding is not applicable to them so that they can go to another fund and actually see this is a better fit for me. Information gap, financial institutions lack information on SMEs, especially in the green sector. We invited a lot of the Cape Town Stock Exchange and a lot of impact investors to these stakeholder sessions that we had in June. And there is definitely a lack between what the financial institution is looking for and the communication of what is a green entrepreneur and what kind of finance is available. The MSE lack knowledge. So there is the Green Cape Green Finance Database, which is fantastic. It's a database that's updated regularly. So to point entrepreneurs to that is very useful, but it's not necessarily coordinated between different departments. So if an entrepreneur goes to an Department of Agriculture, access finance there, but then they also have a water technology that they'd look for climate smart agriculture, who finance that technology? So the coordination between the different flows of finance, we're still looking to map and get more clarity so that it's more visible for the MSMEs. Lack of skills, general, the lack of skills is not necessarily different in the green industries than the non-green industries. But what we do find is more technical experience in terms of technology and due diligence and feasibility studies that's not always available. And some of the entrepreneurs even have to appoint American consultants and pay them in dollars to be able to help them with their business plans and technical expertise, which is lacking. Then regulatory mismatches. We look at the lack of supportive regulations. So we have a green taxonomy in South Africa. And for those of you not familiar with the green taxonomy, you can find it also on the Green Economy Tracker, Policy Tracker. The Green Taxonomy is a policy instrument that identifies the different economic activities that is considered as green, which is really positive for South Africa. Many of the other countries did not have a Green Taxonomy yet. So the presence of burdensome regulations, registration, so the whole formal, informal sector, licenses, tax compliance, we know all of that. I think that's not new to this committee. And then the negative effects of existing regulations that and then informality. In some countries, we found there's a match. Informality is good, but in some countries, it's a mismatch. So in South Africa, most certainly, if you're an informal entrepreneur, very, very difficult to access any form of finance. Then if we're looking at financing local green entrepreneurs, this is just a graph that indicated, you know, a huge amount of funding is through family and friends. The fools, the three Fs, friends, family and fools that is investing in entrepreneurs and helping them to kickstart their businesses. You can see the banks are obviously just following that. And then if we just looked at the kind of key findings, there's internal barriers. So just to differentiate between internal barriers and then, sorry, there's just some people in the room, internal barriers and external barriers. So demands for green goods and social goods. So it's awareness of consumers, you know, in just coming from Europe at the moment, you know, you living the European Green Deal, everything is organic, electrical buses taking you from the airport, electrical scooters. You know, there's a huge demand in Europe also for good quality organic products. And I think in South Africa, what a lot of the local entrepreneurs are struggling with is visibility in online platforms and driving the consumer demand for their products and services. Support required to become green. We do recognize also the entrepreneurs that is not currently in green industries, but they'd like to either participate in the green industry or they would like to just save on energy costs, invest in solar, manage their waste better, and be more responsible with the water that they are using. So there is also support needed more generically for every single SME in the country to be able to reduce their carbon footprint, but also to be able to see the results and the bottom line, reduction of costs, and obviously energy security becoming very important. What we've also heard from WESCO in one of the interviews, when they are talking to SMEs that's been have a good credit record and they are looking to transition into a green industry, the banks are not willing to finance them. They have collateral, they've got a good track record, but the bank still sees the new green industry as a high risk. And they're asking them to first pilot and proof of concept and then return to them before they will invest. that's also a big concern, because with the drive to net zero, a lot more SMEs is going to transition their businesses, or they're going to include a new product or service line that speaks to green solutions. Programs for financial literacy, that's still generic for other SMEs, not and just for green entrepreneurs. Collateral requirements, we mentioned it, and access to financial services. Some external barriers, financial ecosystem challenges. So like I said, very difficult for an entrepreneur to navigate green industries and the green ecosystem. You know, CEDA have obviously your biofuel incubator, they've got the renewable energy incubator, so maybe they've got the new the essential oils incubator, a couple of incubators, which is fantastic. But often the entrepreneurs all compete against each other if they're in the same market, in the same industry. So that's not always maybe the best solution. So some recommendations there for programs like the Youth Bridge Trust Residential Unemployment Stimulus Program, where they have a green economy incubator. And there are 300 youth who participated, and there's 8 different sectors and market intelligence, and the entrepreneur can speed up their ideation journey by accessing the intelligence. And in 6 months, for 300 online participants, they managed to create 71 new registered businesses. But they gave them options of what the green industries are, how relevant these industries' challenges are with people on the ground. So the youth were able to see there's no drinking water for 10 days in my community. What can I do to meet this gap? If there's a problem with waste in the community, they would relate to that and then start a business in the waste sector. Those are just some examples. Banking regulations, obviously external barriers, the regulatory landscape, stakeholder landscape, and the impact of COVID-19. But we can go into a lot more detail of this in the report. I'm mindful of the time. I'm going to highlight a few key things for the funding for green SMEs. It's very important for this committee to advocate, to understand what opportunities are there to unlock barriers to access to inclusive finance, especially for youth-owned and female-owned local green enterprises. So when we looked at the female-owned SMEs in the energy sector, in our focus groups, a lot of the female entrepreneurs said they are not able to participate in small embedded innovation projects. They don't have access to land and access to finance in especially huge amounts of funding that is required to set up projects is not available. Then agricultural SMEs, climate smart agriculture, very, very active. How a lot of women and youth are also setting up urban gardens and addressing local food security challenges, but they have a lack of support, even from the land bank. The land bank have been sitting for a while on a finance that they couldn't distribute because of the capacity in the land bank didn't understand climate smart agriculture or regenerative agriculture. They didn't understand organic and the new technology. So there was a risk in perceiving those clients. But if there is no place to land technology in South Africa, and have an early stage investment for risk appetite, we are going to lose these innovations, because a country is only as strong economically as its technology. You can see the Silicon Valleys and the Googles and all the countries that is, and even in the EU, that is really very fast developing their technology, and also on 4IR, because the intelligence of 4IR is married within what is required in sustainability and green. It's not different. They are together. So we need more support for finance to address technology innovation. And that's your early stage technology readiness level 1, 2, 3 that is missing finance. Then SMEs in the waste sector, there's obviously a need to bridge the formal and the informal sector along with ongoing support. There's a lot of projects and innovation in the waste sector. We're talking about Industry 4 and intelligence apps that PETCO also now started to help the monitoring of volumes of waste and the transactions, that it's not all cash-based, but it can be, there's a transaction via an app. So lots of innovations, but we see increasing waste problems from all streams, if it's e-waste, soon if we're all moving to electrical vehicles in the transport industry, there's going to be a lot of waste that we're going to have to deal with in terms of old vehicles and metal. So your e-waste, organic waste, and obviously a number of the other waste streams. So innovation in the Western Cape, where there's a lot more awareness on composting and managing organic waste at a household level, is helping to not put so much strain on the landfills. If we're looking at the youth in the water sector, which I've mentioned, very active participation, purification of water, harvesting water, transportation tanks, and if we're looking at the new independent water producer, if that's going to come online, it is for the big players, but we created awareness that it's very, very important when those policies are embedded, that in the supply chains of those projects and the 20 to 30 year community impact of funds, there needs to be a very big focus on youth and women inclusion. All right, and then let's see some solutions. So we need to bridge the trust gap between MSMEs and financial institutions. We need to ensure that MSMEs can pledge renewable assets as collateral to improve green public credit guarantee schemes, to bridge the information and capacity gaps. Credit information of sharing mechanisms more granular and green, a robust but simplified chain of ESG information, so on the taxonomy. We need to look at the MSME agency as a one-stop shop, and we have Department of Small Business, and CEDAR is quite active within the ecosystem and creating one-stop shop facilities for SMEs as a go-to point, but focus on green needs to be more visible. And bridging the finance ecosystem gap, we need to unleash DFI's potential for lending targets, looking at green SME facilities and more dialogue. So improving consumer protection is also quite important. Let's look at the Just Energy Transition funding. I know when people see the 8.5 billion, they think, wow, this is incredible. But there needs to be more transparency, and these figures are from a statement made by the EU yesterday to COP27. There is a very big need to look at transparency. Is it only 20% of 8.5 billion earmarked for SMEs? Is it the big players who's going to benefit? I don't know. We need more transparency. We need more answers. So the committee could maybe look into this and report back to SMEs who is desperately trying to see if they hear this amount of money and investment for Just Energy Transition, how will SMEs be able to participate and access funds? And then ensure the participation of youth and female entrepreneurs is very, very important. If we're looking at climate change, I think it's very important. We've started this campaign, Build Back Better, Greener. We need to make sure that we leave no one behind, no women, no youth organization. And these are just a flavor of the different industries. So agriculture, energy, built environment, waste and circular economy, transportation, water and resource and conservation. Then if we're looking at adaptation and mitigation, I just wanted to make sure I briefly touch on this because a lot of people are asking in terms of climate investment, what is the difference and where is the need? If we're looking at South Africa, there's been a lot of attention on climate mitigation. So if we are going to close coal mines and we're moving to renewable energy base, there's a lot of plans and actions in place. We need to attend more on climate adaptation. Very, very important to be able to be resilient. And this brings me to the opportunities for technology for net zero. Again, I want to stress to the committee, sustainability is not separate from 4IR. These are going hand in hand, and we're seeing more green technologies that's more efficient and it's more effective when it is intertwined with 4IR intelligence. Because we need to be able to track carbon reduction, we need to be able to see how much water we're using, how much waste, and what is the reduction in water and consumption over general. So I want to motivate and advocate to this committee for more visibility on local green entrepreneurs. They are agile, they are able to innovate new technologies, products and services that can help drive the low carbon growth and climate proofing. So they can enable ecosystems that is in place, and they have the right, if they have the right types of finance and the support are available for them to do so. So we need to make sure that, we're looking at fire intense seasons, ensure disaster and public health plans account for more severe weather patterns, protect farms and our food supply from climate impacts, This I cannot stress more. The Innovation Fund is about $300 million for agri, which is very important. Our food securities are, I think, the most concerning. We all love to eat in South Africa, but we need to be very aware about what we are eating and how long those food sources are still going to be available. Protect our air quality, obviously access to adequate shelter in smart townships comes in here. I'll share a little bit more about what's happening in Stellenbosch. But to be more resilient, you know, we need smart townships. Transportation infrastructure, we need to be able to look at the rising sea levels and floods. Obviously, KZN, a lot of us have felt that. Water security, even if the water is contaminated, what local solutions can be provided by entrepreneurs to also support municipalities to deal with infrastructure. Localization is absolutely key. We need decentralized infrastructure. We need solar panel rooftops, water tanks, next generation sanitation, food gardens, organic waste management at household level. These are basic things that we're going to be needing for climate change resilience. So feel free to have a look. I'll also put it in the chat on the smart townships. Stellenbosch is putting out the first commitment to help Kaimandi, because there's been a lot of work done with the iShack for energy security, but to make that township more resilient. Then if we're looking at climate adaptation investment, here's a table that I can also circulate to the committee, but agribusiness comes up many times. Construction and real estate, looking at food processing and beverages, forestry, hydropower, insurance, mining, technology, thermal power, transport. I can go into this in more detail, but there's a lot of research that indicates where the climate adaptation investments need to flow to. Then very importantly, policy. Unfortunately, this is maybe where the coffee can become a bit bitter again. The draft SME and cooperative funding policy that was, the first draft was made available in May for commenting. It's completely silent on green, which is really concerning. And we would like to petition that before that document is finalized, there needs to be a review on how it accommodates for local green entrepreneurs and investment in green industries. So a mismatch in summary between supply and demand of SME financing. There is limited effectiveness of government programs designed to support SMEs and cooperatives. This is due to poor coordination. We can always improve in coordination and capacity building. This is findings that's reflected by the SME funding policy. And this is, I've listed it here because it's not just unique to normal SMEs. It's also unique to green entrepreneurs. Right, so I'm not going to go to that in detail, and then I just want to bring awareness. I think with the NIS MED master plan, it's quite important that we look at climate change and looking at adaptation and mitigation. Even if it's in the implementation of the master plan, it's really difficult to change these levels of policy, but in the implementation thereof, we need to be more aware of climate change impacts. Recommendations, okay, access to inclusive finance for local green entrepreneurs. Green financing should be promoted by including it in the new SME and cooperative funding policy. To address policies for reporting on environmental goods, capacity building, to develop a policy that can guide green goods standards and specifications. This can assist the SMEs to navigate. So eco standards is not necessarily always the way, but it could help many entrepreneurs to get their products also in international borders for exports. There's no organic policy, there's very limited eco-labeling, so that also stifles trade. Sector-focused decarbonization strategies is important to link with the green economy ecosystem and the SME value chain. So here I can just share with you, this has done a number of decarbonization strategies for cement, for the waste tires, and also recently for the textiles sector. We looked very actively how SME opportunities are there in terms of the decarbonization of these value chains. And that is in the implementation of the master plans. A dedicated green recovery, local green entrepreneurship program is required that facilitates access to finance and access to market. And DSBD, CEDA and CEPA to link incubation models and BDS programs to address the implications of international trade, the impacts of the European Green Deal, the American Green Deal, to look at the SME risks and opportunities, and also market expansions for future trade. The net zero 2050 decarbonization needs to be taken into consideration for all of these, for the Department of Small Business Development and also for this committee. and more visibility on local green entrepreneurs. I just want to make sure, sorry, I'm going in the wrong direction. I'm almost finished, if you want to bear with me. I think some facts, some reality checks. Was really great to see this report this week that was shared, the climate impact of SMEs. This is a report that saved it, and there is a link that I'll also put in. But this is very important because it shows also the scope one carbon emission data. So it's important that looking at the UK, obviously, which is the first world country, but then South Africa is a third world country. The share of the economy in terms of GDP, 40%, employment, 46%, and share of non-household emissions, 14%. So it's important that SMEs are recognized, you know, their role in the economy for employment creation, you know. It's very, very important, and there is data to prove the role and the impact of carbon emissions that SMEs are contributing. It's not just the big players. So how can government help SMEs? This report was really a great summary to help level the playing field for SMEs by simplifying climate regulation and carbon reporting in a way that is proportional for SMEs. We cannot obviously deal with SMEs how we deal with big business, to remove international trade barriers that inhibit SMEs' ability to purchase or sell sustainable products, provide guidance and digital tools to enable the SMEs to set, to measure, achieve environmental targets. And we know that the GRI, the Global Reporting Initiative, has been doing a lot of work to engage SMEs to start reporting on their carbon footprints. It is another layer of stress and time, but it's going to be very important to help SMEs to be competitive and play in supply chains in the future. Enable greater access and understanding of the data on SMEs' environmental footprint. So it's going to need support. If SEDA can support the incubators to help them to report on behalf of SMEs on their carbon emissions, that could be a huge value add to SME that they don't need to stand on their own to do it. But the reporting and the data will need to become more visible and part of all the incubators' quarterly reporting. Subsidize investments to support SMEs to be taken more seriously and to have more ambitious climate action and invest in climate tech. Then if we're looking at the climate impact report of SAGE, to improve data solutions. So SAGE is all about data, but they have a number of solutions in their report that could help the SMEs to start reporting. All right, and then lastly, net zero transition. I believe that this committee and also the Department of Small Business needs to be more proactive and looking at a net zero transition for 2030 to peak the emissions and 2050. So the proposal is a climate response decarbonization action plan, increase the coordination efforts across departments, capacity building and supply chains for SMEs, especially with the shortening of supply chains that's going to happen. And the drive to net zero, we need to understand these implications, collaboration to mitigate that, decarbonizing of sectors, so looking at the studies and the master plans and how SMEs can be participating in these decarbonization efforts, to increase the accountability for emission scope 1, 2, and 3 reporting, fostering new growth carbon supply chain managing practices, and net zero carbon financing mechanisms. So who is going to pay for the drive to net zero? We cannot put the pressure on the MSMEs. Very, very important to understand who will be paying for that. Capacity building important in government. We've seen even the land bank saying to us as a DFI, the staff or the bank don't understand how to deal with green or organic SMEs. Therefore, the fundings are not flowing to them. Very important to start looking at capacity building and sustainable procurement. So there is some other countries that we've looked at who have successfully started green procurement clubs. We know in South Africa's context, it might not be as effective because of all our other legislative requirements that's already quite a bit of burden on SMEs to comply with. So we don't want to make that more intense. The next steps, very positive to conclude. This infographic that you see is a study that I did with PAGE in 2016, where we and UNEP and the DFFE, where we looked at mapping the green economy. And now the next steps is TIPS is working on the phase 3 green economy coalition work together with the EDSE unit to support the Department of Small Business and to look at mapping green industries more effectively and SME opportunities to make it more visible. And also then another layer is mapping the innovative finance for green industries that's available so that the entrepreneurs can connect to that. And a lot of fact sheets will be developed to help entrepreneurs to also understand this more effectively. Thank you very much. If there's anybody who would like to contact me, I'm happy to put my details in the slide. And I hope that I manage the 30 minutes in good timing. If there's anything that's been too fast, please slow me down. I'm happy to take questions. Thank you, members. Is everybody still awake? I hope I didn't put everybody to sleep. And a few high fives. Thank you. I'll hand over back to the chair.
Is the chair still in?
I'm happy to take questions.
Sorry, Mr. Jacobs, the chair is experiencing some network challenges, so may you please proceed with chairing.
Okay. Members, if it's okay with you, I will just stand in for our chair. I recognize Honorable Kruger as our first respondent. Honorable Kruger.
Thank you, Chair. Of course, this is a passion for me as well. And I think small businesses, we need to make sure that small businesses are entering the space, especially on the renewable energy side. But saying that, as government, the government must do better to bring SMMEs on the forefront of the whole renewable energy concept. However, red tape is a huge block for SMMEs to enter, and that gives business an unfair benefit. And red tape is for sure keeping SMMEs out of the renewable business. So, Chair, I agree 100% about the presentation, and I thank Elise for it. I think it was very informative, but I want to stress my point again. We need to look at red tape and the ease of doing business on all aspects of small businesses, but especially because we talk now about green energy and what's the name, you know, earth warming and all the so I'm one of the greenies, but if we don't stop or have specific strategies in place to reform red tape in government, we're going to keep on keeping SMMEs out of business, and they will all then, you know, small business will only pick up the crumbs. And I think us as a committee, our job is not to feed small businesses the crumbs. We need to get small businesses to start becoming big players, especially in this space. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Kruger. Is there any other inputs from members? Maybe just from my side, while we're waiting for other members, I also want to thank Elise and the TIPS organization for a very informative, very comprehensive presentation. I think there's a lot of information here, and I think I speak on behalf of all the members that this portfolio certainly supports and endorses this new transition, the just transition. I think the president in Cairo this morning said that we need trillions. I don't know what was the exact number, but he said we need trillions to move the just transition. And there's many NGOs here in the Western Cape and social movements that says that the clean, the just transition and the green economy can help with major job creation. And we don't just want energy producers by big companies or multinationals. I think for us, as a broad principle, we want energy equity. We want equity in the ownership. And we want small people, small businesses, the voiceless, the marginalized communities, the poor across South Africa, not to be dependent on the grid, but also to help with being producers and not consumers. So I think as a principle, we support this. We like the fact that you are, Comrade Denise, that you are available to guide us in terms of a framework. And I hope that the department is in here so that you and the officials can follow up. We also want to ask the I think it's the Just Transition Secretariat. The president have identified a commission and a group of people that's going to manage this transition. I think that 20% is a good start. And we need to ensure how we implement it. It's not obviously ideal, but I think you have given us just a sense of what is possible. I would want to ask our officials to ask that you come back very frequently. We need to have a fund. I think access to finance is a big thing. And we need to get our private sector, the big polluters and the big energy consumers to also come to the party. So I'd like to invite you to also approach the council or the secretariat, the Presidential Just Transition Council. So we can get them on board. We also want to invite the other portfolio committee of environmental affairs with your good selves to see how we can implement this. I think for us, there's many opportunities here, and it's also an opportunity to correct a lot of the inequities in the ownership of the economy. So being green is the right thing to do. Being green is will also help with managing the people, profit, and the planet. I think if you look at that, the triple bottom line, we need a sustainable earth, and we also need our people to be brought into mainstream. You know, some people have this misconception that green is only for white liberals, but I think green is an important concept that we embrace wholeheartedly, not just talk. But if we want to have a generation for our kids, a future for our kids, we need to pay it forward. And so the just transition is important. But we also need to look at how we don't lose the jobs. I mean, towns like Witbank and where there's a lot of coal dependencies, we need to ensure that people see the benefits now already of moving for this transition. So I think certainly from my side, we welcome this presentation. I see Honorable Matulelwa, so I was just a short ad break. Comrade Honorable Matulelwa, you may go. Go ahead.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Mine is very short, but I just want to register this. If I may ask, is there any estimated number of small businesses capacitated to form part of renewable energy, specifically in KZN and Eastern Cape, where KZN also it form part of it has got some coal and any other industries. And then I just want to register that there should be a change of the way of classifying small businesses in terms of producing energy, and there must be a special intervention on making sure that small businesses are owning this space, because you can see that the apparently, even if those people are not in this space, but there are some of the rural areas where people participate, but informally, because it's not registered under, I don't think that you even know about those people. But my suggestion is that you must make sure that you also do some kind of bringing them forward and make sure that you develop them towards this, because they are doing it, but they don't know that they form part of what you are presenting here. So it's just my recommendation that I wanted to register. Thank you so much, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Atulewa. That's a good suggestion. Members, any other inputs before we allow Elise to respond? I don't see any hands. We have. Hi, Honourable April. Please come in. Honourable April, are you on the platform?
No, Chair, it was me, Mr. Gunene, indicating that there's no hands that I see.
Oh, my apologies. Elise, we just want you to respond to some of the inputs made by members. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I think there wasn't any direct questions, but more reflections. So I do agree maybe with the very last comment on capacitating SMEs in areas that's not the Western Cape or the Northern Cape. You know, it's very important to look at the newcomers and the new industries that's investing in renewables. And yeah, I think to monitor their progress, but also support them on maybe reporting on their impacts, their positive environmental, social and economic impacts. I think that's very valuable. And also, if we have more data to understand where they are, what their needs are, you know, we can definitely look at recommending more proactive programs. I know renewable energy incubators Sarebi, which is situated in the Western Cape and Atlantis and the SEZ area, and they are now no longer within borders. They are incubated without borders, and they are online mostly. So they have been getting more increased participation across the country in other provinces, just to help with basic back office support. But that what they've also mentioned, I think it's useful for people to understand, there's a lot of entrepreneurs with one or two man show or women shows, small businesses that have really good access to market. They have clients who want solar PV, but they cannot find the 200,000 to 300,000 working capital at a low interest rate to buy their technology to install the equipment. It's a very, very big problem and a huge concern. So, you know, we need more innovative finance mechanisms to even just help with working capital. There is a market, there's a willing buyer, there's a capable entrepreneur to install, but the financing is not there. It's at such a high rate that it's not viable for the entrepreneur. So I think the capacity building that I'm hearing in the Eastern Cape area, but also the provision of low interest loans and especially for working capital, very important. And then the other reflection, I think, was just the green hearts in the committee that was speaking about consensus and continuing this conversation, and I'm looking very much forward. I know this was a lot to take in half an hour, but maybe in more bite sizes as we progress also with our work with the EDSE and supporting the department, we could maybe report back on some of our research and some of our tools that we'd like to develop for the financiers to better understand the market, the demand for finance, and also for the SMEs fact sheets to understand where the finance is sitting. so that these can better interact with each other. And the mapping of all the really great new green industries and opportunities that's taking place to make it more visible for entrepreneurs to participate in these markets. I take note of that, and the notion of we don't want to leave it to big business. We want to make sure in procurement guidelines that small businesses are included in the renewable energy independent power producer, small scale, also big scale, but also the new independent water production that's going to start happening in the country. I think there's a huge amount of opportunities. So thank you very much. I'm very happy to return anytime that you need me to continue the conversation. Have a good meeting. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Elise. I think we certainly would welcome this, and we ask our officials to have you back on a regular basis. We also ask you to put you into contact with CIFA and also the other development funding agencies so that we can actually, and we want to encourage those that are empowered to have a green small business fund or green entrepreneurial fund from government and private sector. You know, when we come together, there was a job summit, a jobs fund, for example, put together so that small business can access these opportunities. We want government to make the technology available. Like, for example, simple things like having communities own the solar power that's going to be generated is a massive thing, because then we empower people not to be dependent on multinationals. And so I think we're looking at big projects that have maximum impact and socializing the social capital that is there. So next time, Elise, let's come up with concrete suggestions. Let's come up with partnerships with your friends. We certainly want to take your details, and then we also want to link you up with existing CIFA, CEDA, Small Business Department, DTI, and also the Secretariat on the Just Transition. So thank you again for the presentation, and we wish you well. Continue to do the good work. I think we are very happy that there are people like you that will help with development and ensure that getting us in the green economy makes sense and is sustainable and is a win-win for all our communities. So thank you very much again. Thanks, Elise.
Thank you.
All right, members. I think we've now, if we can just go back to our agenda. Mr. Kunene, and then maybe we look at where we are on the agenda. Consideration and adoption of the petition report. Members, while we flag this petition, I think we all have received this petition. And last week we said that as parties, we're going to give each other time to go through this petition. And then also, yes, Elise, you are excused, and thanks again. We said that the petition has been shared with all of us, and we are allowing parties to engage with the recommendations of our officials. So maybe whilst we allow parties to prepare, Mr. Gumede, can you just go to the presentation and just remind us of the recommendations so that we can adopt it. So we don't want to go through the whole report. Maybe just flag the recommendations, and then I'm going to call for adoptions. But Mr. Gumede, maybe just take 5-10 minutes just to take us through summarizing the recommendation. I think there was broad consensus last week already for the report, but I think we will allow parties just to make input on it. Mr. Gumede, over to you.
Chairperson, thank you very much. Morning to you, morning honourable members, morning colleagues, morning to some of the IFT representatives who are attending this meeting. Chair, as you've currently pointed out, we did circulate this report last week in order to give members of the committee an opportunity to make contributions, input, subtractions, any alteration that members may deem fit to ensure that we strengthen the document. Chair, I have not received any inputs from members, but what I've received through my discussion with Evelyn was, you know, the material inaccuracy from what we were told by Telkom. It's on page 4. It's just one error on page 4, Chair, which speaks to the number of contracts that were extended by Telkom. In this paragraph, Chair, you will see that we are saying the last sentence, all 4 IFT companies are still active in providing services on the commodity contract and have also consented to their contracts being renewed for a further period ending February 2023. This was confirmed to the committee in writing by Telkom OpenServe. Chair, I've had an engagement with Evelyn with regards to this matter, and she has stated explicitly that no, she declined to continue. I hope I'm putting this correctly. She declined to continue until the end of February 2023. So I thought, Chair, if we adopt this report now, it will be important for the members to note that we also need to make or to include that point to say out of the 4 IFT companies, only 3 decided to continue with the contract until the end of February 2023. But Usundan or Miss Evelyn Smith decided no, she won't be able to continue until 10/23. Chair, then if you look at the observations and the recommendations, it's on page the observations are on page 18. The first one being the committee notes that parties could not find common ground on several issues stemming from the revised contract. This is the revised contract of 2017. Equally, it is observed that there are areas where parties registered progress, including the extension of the contract to 2023. The committee is mindful that facilitating disputes between big and small businesses is part of its broader mandate. It is inevitable. The committee noted from the beginning that owing to its limited powers, it may not be feasible to achieve all the predetermined outcomes due to the complexity of the issues. Throughout its engagement with Telkom OpenServe and IFT companies, the committee noted that fundamental intents of the ESD were completely omitted in Telkom OpenServe's approach to IFT companies. Telkom OpenServe treated IFT companies like any other big business. The developmental approach is missing. It remains unclear to the committee how or the nature of support Telkom OpenServe provides to its subcontractors, particularly IFTs. The committee notes that during the 5th Parliament, the telecom sector was engaged extensively owing to the growing number of complaints that the committee had received at the time. There had also been complaints leveled against Telkom. A sizable number of small enterprises have over time resolved to approach Parliament to intervene in various commercial disputes. The effort by the former member of the committee, Honorable Toby Chance, that of introducing the Small Enterprise Ombuds Service Bill, is noted by the committee. The Private Members Bill had been introduced in the National Assembly as a Section 75 and was published in the Government Gazette No. 41623 of 10 May 2018. Furthermore, as the committee remarked in its recent budget review and recommendations report, that in light of a variety of challenges bedeviling the sector, a segmented approach to the bill should be given priority. The Department of Small Business Development's failure to refer the National Small Enterprise Amendment Bill to Parliament, as pledged in its consecutive annual performance plan since 2015, should not be accepted nor used as an excuse. The small business sector is vulnerable and prone to big business manipulation. The committee must explore alternative options to caution the sector. Then, Chair, if we look at the recommendations, the first one was, having noted the growth in the number of grievances, disputes, and one petition, I'm referring to this petition that we are currently dealing with, and one petition referred to the committee since in its inauguration, the committee supports the fifth Parliament recommendation that the Small Enterprise Commission or Ombudsman created through an Act of Parliament must be fast-tracked. As envisaged during the fifth Parliament, when sessions between big and small businesses were held to ascertain the extent of corporate bullying and victimization of small businesses, the committee should consider the committee bill. The process may include synthesizing the small enterprise was introduced by the department, or it was published for public comments in December 2020. Then it died down. We never had, there was never any progress that was registered in as far as referring it to Parliament is concerned. So members, we may discuss this at a later stage with regards to developing a committee bill. We can discuss this later. But the recommendation, I think, honourable members, it's within your right to decide if we go this route. Or the department is invited when in the minister would be in attendance to brief members of the committee if the possibility of separating all the issues that the department seeks to address in the review of the National Small Enterprise Amendment Bill is concerned. If we can't separate or go through a segmented approach in terms of dealing with this legislation, we are already making an observation, honorable members, to say during 2003 and 2004, there was a review of the National Small Business Amendment Act by then Department of Trade and Industry. So there is a precedent already. You know, a department can review or can review the act now, refer to the legislature, and refer other sections to the legislature the following year if they can't do it simultaneously during the current financial year. Then the other recommendation, honorable members, is 5.3. At the commencement of its term in 2019, the committee had noted and recommended that a particular focus must be given to ESD and other BEE codes of good practice, which are currently being used to comply or a tick box exercise, adding little value to the small enterprise ecosystem. If you ask me, what value is Telkom ESD adding to IFTs? I won't be able to answer, despite all the meetings we have had with Telkom. The Department of Small Business Development must reinforce internal capacity to intensify private or grow private sector partnerships, harness ESD's good intents, and monitor its implementation. Honorable members, we learned on 5.4, we are making a recommendation that we learned that some of the cost incurred by IFT companies, such as the hiring of the vehicles, could have been avoided if the department was working closely with Telkom in terms of subsidizing the IFTs. But clearly, that did not happen. Then the last recommendations, having noted its limitations, e.g. powers to enforce contracts. Honorable members, you will recall when we started, we did note our limitations in terms of dealing with this particular matter. Number two, the petitions that are referred to Parliament are then dealt with in terms of the provisions that are provided for in the Constitution. They are also dealt with in terms of the provisions that are provided for in the National Assembly rules. So a committee cannot act beyond the scope of those provisions. The committee, what we're seeing here, we note from the first recommendation that there is a stalemate. Then what we are saying, the committee will nonetheless continue to monitor developments between IFT companies and Telkom OpenServe. As we said, honorable members, it's our responsibility to keep track of the developments that are happening in the SMME space. Even if you adopt this petition today, it does not necessarily mean that it's the end of the story. But what is required of us, after having received this petition from the Speaker of the Parliament, we have a responsibility or a duty to develop this report for this committee to consider the report, make your own observation and recommendations. Then we adopt, we refer the report back now to the Speaker of the Parliament. Then, Chair, I thought I should just raise those few issues in as far as this report is concerned. Maybe also, Chair, to also indicate that there is a report that we received from Mr. Tolo this morning. I decided not to respond to that report because it was more of an accusation of what one is doing, as if we are siding with Telkom, whereas the committee is trying its utmost best to deal with this particular issue, given the limited authority that we have as a parliament to intervene in the issues between the two parties. So let me end there, Chairperson. I can take questions or clarify a few issues that are not clearly spelled out in the report. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Kumede. Members, before I'll allow you an opportunity, I have seen the hand of IFT, so I'm going to give them an opportunity to make a submission. I think for us, we want to conclude on the matter. Let's. I don't know who is from the IFTs, but I want to recognize that hand. May you put your camera on and the voice, and you are allowed to speak. IFT companies. Okay. I also then Honorable Hendricks, you will be after that. Your sound is off. Ms. Smith, is that Ms. Smith? Please put your mic on.
It's on.
Now you can speak. Yeah.
I would like to rectify something with regards to on page. Telkom states that there's four active companies, but it's not four active companies. There are three active companies. I'm not active because when you have a dispute with Telkom stopped you from working. And I didn't have the financial muscle to continue or the resources. And I haven't received any contract from Telkom or give any consent to continue with the contract. That is not true. Yeah, I didn't decline it or refuse. I just want to rectify.
I think Mr. Gumede did make the point that of the four IFPs, yourself, Evelyn Smith, is one that has not agreed to it. So we will record it as such. I think for us, it's and also if you look at our recommendations, you must appreciate the limitations that we have. And if you listen to our submission, this is what we're going to do. I think we still feel that Telkom is unfair and you still reserve your rights. We were really hoping that they could find a win-win situation on this matter. We apologize. It's unfortunate that that's not the case. So now I'm going to acknowledge your input. We have corrected it as such in our report. And now I'm going to allow members of the committee to come in here and to basically respond to the recommendation and the report that we need to submit to the speaker. Honorable Hendricks, I recognize you now.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Honorable Chair, I'm not sure if this is the right time, but I did lose the proceedings for a while, and I'm trying to catch up because I wanted to raise some issues around amending legislation. So I want guidance from you, Chair. Is this the right time? Did I lose that opportunity, or will that come later?
Okay. So, Honorable Henry, just to help you, I think what we're doing now is we're engaging with the reports that must be submitted to the speaker on the Telkom petition. And there is a lot of recommendations, one of them being that this committee must deal with the ombudsman. I think we as the members have this committee. This presentation has been tabled to all of us in last week's portfolio committee. So it is linked to our commitment to having the legislation in. So, I mean, I want you to record your opinion on it as the different parties. So we want to basically engage with the presentation. So for now, I will allow all of the parties, all the members to just comment. Let's focus on the recommendation. Let's focus on the report. Ideally, I'd want to get a seconder and adoption of this report as a true reflection of what we as the portfolio committee feels that we must share to the Speaker of Parliament. So, Honorable Hendricks, I'm going to give you another bite. Maybe just put your issues on the table, including the intention of the committee to have a public appeal from this portfolio committee. So I recognize Honorable Hendricks, then I recognize Honorable Matulelwa, and then I recognize Honorable Kruger in that order.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, for your generosity and allowing us to speak on a very important matter, and that is that this committee has identified that there needs to be amendments to one or more pieces of legislation or even a new bill in order to, for example, address the issues that has come before us today, including the issues of the umbat. We must use the word umbat. Umbatsman, man is not gender sensitive, so I prefer the use of the word umbat. That was raised by Judge Dessa, I think you were present, and he said that he's not an ombudsman, he's an umbat. So Honorable Chair, look, Al-Jamaa is very passionate to put before this committee its proposal that we replace the permit with a registration certificate to enable roadside workers to trade and to help the poorest of the poor and indigent to become involved in the economic activities of the country. So whether that is going to be a standalone matter or whether, you know, we want to do things piecemeal may not be a good idea. The committee may as well look at all the issues that has come before it and its predecessors and come up with a piece of legislation or pieces of legislation. So we welcome the report because it helps us move in that direction. But I want to put on the record that that we are engaged with our legal drafting team that we set up to do private members' bills. We have done 3 bills successfully, and we are now looking at what we can do to amend legislation. That should actually be the work of this portfolio committee. But if this portfolio committee are going to drag their feet like they've been dragging their feet for 10 years, we will have to, you know, consider doing a private member's vote. I just wanted to put that on the record. And we're at an advanced stage to bring about amendments to whatever act so that the permit is replaced by a registration certificate and open the floodgates for the poorest of the poor to start getting involved in our economy. Thank you very much for the time, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Hendrik, Honorable Matulelwa.
Thank you, Chair. I might be seen to be just taking a cab, but I'm not taking a cab. I'm just feeling very bad about this matter, because the sad part of it, it's a fourth time now we are touching on it without the presence of the minister. Yeah, the process now has taken a very long time, but we are patient with it. But this is a serious matter that should have been dealt with long time ago. More especially that we are dealing with an incident that happened under the same minister that is presiding over this department. It was the minister. I believe that if she was the minister of the communications there, it must be very simple to deal with the matter like this, because she might know some of the details. But I just wanted to say that we wish that this process must be taken to consideration and thank you very much, Chair.
Honorable Kruger.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to put it on record that being part of this committee since the beginning, we didn't drag feet. We did a lot of things, especially in the Fifth Parliament. So I just want to put it that on record. Point number two, Chair, I would like to propose that that the report is in order. Although we mustn't let one stone untouched to try to solve this. And again, and I'm sounding now like a broken record, but
oh, yeah.
There is this strategy of small business talking about transversal agreements in MOUs. And surely the department, there's a lot of bullying going in the communication sector, and surely the department must use that methods and that agreements to solve this type of problems. But I want to, as sponsor of the petition, I want to thank the committee for their hard work and making work of it and be very serious about it. And I feel very proud of the fact that this committee, or that a committee like this, choose to take the part of the small business and not just follow big business as usual. So thank you, Chair, and I propose that we accept a report like this with the amendments, of course, of Mevrouw Smit, and then and also I think we must just note that
this is not the end of it. We will still try to get Mevrouw Smit and their business off the ground and make it 100% fair for them to do business where they what they're supposed to do. Thank you, man. Chairperson.
Thank you. So there's a proposal. Can I get a seconder for the adoption of this proposal with all of those amendments with Mrs. Smith's inputs? I also want us to see maybe we can add Honorable Matulelwa's point about the executive, the minister of responsible for Telkom, also playing a key role of accountability. With all of those inputs, can I get a, we have a proposal, can I get a seconder, please? Honorable Bridget, Honorable Lorraine, can I ask you to second, please?
I'll second, Chair.
Thank you very much. So members, we have, as this portfolio committee, passed this petition report. We want to thank our officials that's drafting this. We want to also say to all the IFPs and Mr. Smith that this David and Goliath fight is not yet over. We will table it and we will debate it and we will continue. And we want to call on the big organizations like Telkom and all the other stakeholder enterprise that this is really not acceptable. Even though we don't have the jurisdiction or to force them to do this, we as a committee are unanimous that we are not happy with the police practice, and all the parties across this portfolio endorse the recommendations that we need to have the ombudsman and that we will implement this this bill. I think Honorable Hendrik's point is made that we as a committee will engage, whether it's a private members bill or whether the portfolio committee, we need to see how we can accommodate and find each other. And we also agree with Honorable Tumelwa's point that we should have had the Minister of Communications and Telecommunications also to account. Why is Telkom not willing and able to find a win-win situation on this and clearly demonstrating their lack of responsiveness, the lack of caring and willingness to help with small business. This portfolio will remain the champion for small business, the underdogs, the business, the micro enterprises, the informal sector, and we will continue to fight and raise the flag because entrepreneurship needs to start from the bottom and we must support. We are in an economy that is highly concentrated. And so we need to deconcentrate our economy and ensure ownership, economic ownership. We need to do whatever it takes, influence, cajole, force, and also ensure compliance going forward. So thank you, honorable members. I think if we can go back to the agenda and check what is still outstanding, Mr. Kunene?
Chair, if you may allow me, while Mr. Kunene is still coming through.
Please, Chair, Mr. Kunene.
Chair, maybe just to conclude, Chair, on this petition. The level of frustration, Honorable Chairperson, among the sector, it's hitting the roof. This is one area that we identified long time ago that it requires a legislative response. The reason why the private members bill by then member Honorable Chance was vetoed, it was because the department had been given a platform to indicate what are they doing on their part in terms of assisting the small enterprise sector in dealing with, among others, the corporate bullying. There was a promise. I'm happy Ms. Elise Kukemir is here because there was a presentation that was done by the department and there were promises that were made that within a space of 3 months, a portfolio committee will be dealing with e-ombuds. But for some reasons, it never happened. And that was, I think, more than 5 years ago. We are now in year 2022. We're still dealing with one and the same issue. So, Chair, my view is we need an engagement, an urgent engagement with the department where Minister and the Deputy Minister will be in attendance. They need to put it in black and white. When are we getting this bill? Because if we get this from the officials will come through and say one thing, and then come the next financial year, you know, this undertaking is not on the annual plan of the department. So it's an issue, Chairperson, that in my humble point of view, it really needs to be escalated to the executive authority of the department, because it can't be correct, honorable members, that as legislators, we have never dealt with a single bill. It can't be correct. Yet the issues affecting SMMEs, keep going up. You heard this morning the issue of non-payment. It's getting worse. And in our view, when we adopted this recommendation during the fifth parliament, it was precisely to deal with some of those issues of non-payment of service providers on time. So it's getting worse, honorable members. I think the sooner we move, the better, honestly. I thought I should just say that, honorable chairperson, in conclusion. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. We concur fully with you, Mr. Gumede. And that must be written also in the recommendations. And this portfolio is supporting 100% your sentiments and the frustrations that you have. Members, we are at the last point. Can we consider the minutes of the 2nd of November?
Sorry. Apology. Yes? My hand is still up. Jay, if I can just comment something. Chair, this is, of course, this is not the last debate on the petition. We will still have a chance to debate the report in Parliament, of course. So this is not, it's not just going into a file. It will still be debated in Parliament. That's my first point. And my second point is, Chair, and I hear our content advisor, and I agree 100% with him, but I think this committee already made a decision that we're going to push the Ombudsman Bill or the Ombuds Bill. So there's no need to talk to the minister. There's no need to talk to the deputy minister. We talk now to the bill, and we make sure that the bill is tabled in Parliament, and we make sure that small businesses like Mevrouw Smit and every other small businesses, I can give you a list for, can be helped. Because if we have to wait for the department, we're going to wait very long. So I just want to make that point so that we noted that I think on two occasions we already was part of the recommendations. And I think we must go flat out now and get the Ombuds Bill tabled so that we can save our small businesses. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Kruger. While we flag the minister as the last point, I think we've also agreed that the letter of intention on behalf of our Chair must be submitted to the Speaker. The letter of intention for this portfolio to do the portfolio bill must also be tabled. I think it is an oversight for this meeting, and we hope that it will be tabled next time around. Members, can I direct you to the minutes in front of you? Mr. Kunene, if you can just go up. Opening and welcome. Please proceed. Continue. Continue. Briefing by the Pick and Pay group. tabling and consideration and adoption. Continue. Continue, consideration of committee minutes, deliberations. Continue. Resolutions, continue. Chairperson's remarks and then closure. Members, here's the minutes of the 2nd of November. Can we get a mover and a seconder for the adoption of this minutes, please?
Chair.
Members, can I? Yes, Honorable Lubengwe.
I move for the minutes.
Thank you.
I move for the adoption of the minutes.
Thank you, Honorable Lubengwe, for the moving of the minutes. Can I get a second? Honorable Kromilang. Members, can I get a second?
Okay, in Kosultuli, it seems like he wants to talk.
May I second the minute?
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, honorable members. So our minutes have been duly adopted. With that, members, I want to thank all of you for your participation and all the presentations. The meeting stand adjourned, and we will see each other in the house. Thank you, everybody. The meeting is closed.
Thank you, Chair.